And now I would like to introduce our speaker, Christina H.
Thank you for coming out tonight. I appreciate all of you coming to be here with me tonight as I share my strength, hope, and experience. It's been a nice little journey we've had here this summer during doing this speaker series. I came to program in May of 1981. I was a fat kid, a fat adolescent, a fat young woman. There were periods of time when I would be able to get down to a normal weight. That's usually when I moved out of the house. But when I came back, I just would use food to sedate my feelings. Whenever I got nervous, I'd put something in my mouth. My highest weight was about 215 pounds. When I came to OA in 1981, it was about 190 pounds. I'm about 30 pounds down from that. I never realized I ate because I was a sensitive person. And I think today that I needed every cookie I ever put in my mouth to keep me alive until I got here. When I came, I found out about OA from my mother. This is really an ironic thing. She had come down. We always had an adversarial relationship. It was like static all the time. She came down to my house at one time when my kids were small. And I was serving lunch, and she didn't have a piece of dessert. And I said, "Oh, gee, that's interesting. Are you on a diet?" She says, "I'm on the OA." And I said, "And what's that?" She says, "I go to meetings on Morris Park." And so I thought, well, this is interesting. I called our hotline number. Nobody called me back. A year later, when I was really desperate, I called again and got a person and went to a meeting that night that had about 90, 100 people in it. I never saw anything like this before. It was incredible. They were having a meeting that night about a man who had been successful in the program and dropped dead of a heart attack. And I never saw such love, people remembering him. They also had somebody qualifying, and she looked like Miss America. And she had lost about 200 pounds, she mentioned at the end of her story. And we have a few people in this area that are that have lost over 100 pounds and found a way to do that. And my mouth dropped open, and I went up to her at the end of the meeting, and I said, "So what do you do?" Because nobody weighed me. Nobody pushed anything on me. She said, "Honey, you get a big book and you get a sponsor." And that was the beginning of my journey. I said, "What is a sponsor?" She said, "You know those people that stood up saying that they had completed their 30 days and their writings? This girl over here, who is just 6 weeks ahead of me in program, is available to be your sponsor." And so I got this Dignity of Choice pamphlet, which had a variety. We have a Dignity of Choice pamphlet today. That one also had a variety of food plans. I picked one, and I thought, I don't know what they're talking about here, but there's something lovely about their energy. And many of the people that I have come to love and respect, some of them were around that night, the closest people to me in this world are in this program. So what did I learn? I learned to have a structure in my life. I wrote down my food every day, and I called this girl and didn't deviate from anything because I respected the fact that she gave me her time. And then after about 10 days, now I had been used to eating every 2 hours, I said to her, I'm hungry in between meals. She said, can you read your big book? And so little by little, I learned, or my life opened up to what this program had to offer. And as that happened, you know, as I read the big book, I had questions. Well, she wasn't a big book thumper, but her sponsor was. And if I ever asked her anything that she wasn't quite prepared to answer, she said, I'll ask my sponsor and get back to you about that. And so that's how it began, putting one day next to the other. And then after 30 days, I had my first 30 days of being abstinent. And I didn't know how it happened. They said, would you like to share how it works? I said, I don't know. I got a sponsor. I got a big book. I wrote down my food. And I didn't really talk in these meetings. I was painfully shy in the beginning. I would take the ashtrays off the table and put away the chairs. That's what I did for a couple of months. But my sponsor had a friend who was very into being welcoming. This is why it's so important when new people come in. You know, we become so bonded here, we want to know how each other are doing. But the new person coming in, sometimes they find it hard to get acquainted. So, you know, I always try to say hello to the new people. I always try to introduce them around. I ask the people that I sponsor sometimes to make it a service of theirs to, you know, welcome new people in. Because, you know, there are many, many good souls that I have known over the years that are not here today. And I don't want to sit here by myself as time goes on. I know that this program works as sure as I'm sitting here. I know it for sure. And some days, you know, some days my sponsor is a day ahead of me in spirituality. And sometimes, you know, I'm a day ahead of somebody else. And I need everybody here. It's just so vital. And the most important thing that she would say to me, now remember, Christina, we just do this one day at a time. So that's what I kept in my head in the beginning. Can we do it just for the next hour, just for the next meal, just for today? And, you know, when the debating society would come up in my head, I'd say, okay, we're just going to put this to the side, and I'm just going to do this for the next hour. It says in step two, as we become aware of our eating guidelines, we ask God for the willingness and the ability within them each day. We ask and we receive first the willingness and then the ability. We can count on this without fail. If that isn't some serious promise, I don't know what is. Over the years, I've done a lot of different things to try and keep the ideas and the philosophy of this program fresh in my mind. Because it's easy, you know, to kind of get stuck in a groove. And there was one time I was participating in a step writing loop on the internet. And this girl posted this exercise one week and said, you know, there are promises in each of the steps. And she encouraged us to go through the steps and put a P next to what we thought the promises were. And this is one of the places where I have a P next to step one. What were the important things in the program? Well, the goddesses and the gods in the front of the room, and there were a lot of men in the beginning, examined the literature. The women knew the third step prayer. And that is what is so important and unique about this program. If you don't examine the literature, then you've missed it. And that third step prayer, I have said it gently. I have said it in a rage. I have said it you know, as many different ways as you can say it. But it's kind of like one of those points of reference for me when I am when I'm feeling good and when I'm feeling not so good. God, help me to change a little bit here. Relieve me of the bondage of self so that I can better do thy will. And a lot of times after I finish saying it out loud in a rage, something shifts inside of me, which is the point of the whole exercise. In the beginning, people did a lot of service. And they went through the process, and they modeled doing a step four. So I did a couple of cursory step fours in the beginning, and I told the things I wasn't too embarrassed about on the step fours and kind of left the rest to the side. And then I was in about 6 years and started having difficulty with my food. And I thought, I have to do something different here. So I picked the strongest woman I could find, and she was formidable. And and when I went up to her and asked her to be my sponsor, I said, do you have time? And she said, no. And I said, would you put me on a waiting list? And she said, yes. And about 6 weeks later, she came up to me in a meeting. She said, somebody drop me. You can call me at 5:30. You call me with your food every day. Once a week, we talk about the step, and we go 1 to 12. I said, yes, ma'am. This is the way it went. And so when we got to the fourth step, you know, my ego, I believe, kept me alive till I got here, as I said before. And it was a very good self-preservation machine. But the ego, in my opinion, tries to maintain the status quo. And when you go to step beyond that, it'll say, you don't need to do that. You're a good person. You don't need to reach out to those people. You don't need to tell somebody about that. Well, you know, doing the fourth step, writing it all down, was my first exercise in just cracking through that shell. But I tried to bargain with her. And I said, you know, it's Christmas time and I'm going to be depressed. And she said to me, you deserve the way you're going to feel when you finish that fourth step. And she said, honey, I take people steps 1 to 12. So the choice was mine. I could do it or we wouldn't have a working relationship. And so I had this old AA form with the 7 deadly sins, and the first one, I think, was theft. And I dragged myself to the table that day, and I had small children at the time. And I said, I thought to myself, okay, I'm going to set the timer for 10 minutes. And after 10 minutes, if I haven't written anything, I'm released. I can step away from the table. And you know what's funny? That resistance melted as I picked up the pen and put it on the paper. And many, many times that timer went off. And I'm still writing and writing and writing. And what I learned is that there was nothing that I was writing down that I didn't already know. And there was nothing that I told her that she was startled about. What a wonderful thing to be able to, to trust somebody with that kind of information. And then we pushed on through 6 and 7 and got to step 8. And I had this list of people. It says in our step book, we need to list them and the harm we did. It may help us to remember that our purpose in doing step 8 is not to judge others, but to learn the attitudes of mercy and forgiveness. So there again, you know, the ego is right there. You know, in our friendships, whatever they were. They were not kind to you either. You know, they're going to think you're a lunatic. How can I ever find these people? She said to me, can you go to the library and look in a telephone book? I found everybody's address in the telephone book. I wrote the letters. I went to the mailbox. The choir in my head is singing in high C as I'm standing by the mailbox. And I hear her words, it doesn't matter what they did. It matters what you did. And I put the letters in the mailbox. And something dropped. And I knew that if I ever saw them on the street, I would be able to go over and say, hello, how are you? And previously, I probably would have crossed the street and avoided any contact. There were also people I reached out to after all those years. And one of them was something I thought I was going to go to my grave with. I was very ashamed of my part in this relationship with this man. And I found out where he worked, and I called him up. And I said, I want you to know that I'm very ashamed of how I... And he said, you know what? I've always wished you well. He said, don't feel sorry for me. I have a good life. And we had a very nice conversation. And I guess a couple months later, we had lunch. And we don't need to have a relationship anymore. I'm good, and he's good. And that was something I was going to go to my grave with. And if it weren't for the program, there would still be that wall of shame between me and this person. And what an interference that is when you're trying to live well. The other thing I did was I developed new ways to pray. It seemed that when we talk about a spiritual life here, it's very different from anything I grew up with. I grew up in religious schools and went to church on Sunday. But for some reason, I couldn't use it as far as this compulsive eating was concerned. And I couldn't use my intellect as far as compulsive eating is concerned. I have bookcases full of how to be a better person books. I have bookcases on what your zone is and what your blood type is and all this stuff. And none of those books ever stopped me from putting my hand in a bag or got me thin or to a maintenance weight before I got here. It didn't happen because there was nothing to sustain me after the applause left. But I tell you what does open up your life. When you come in here and you follow the philosophy and you do service and you sponsor people and you have a sponsor, your life opens up. I pray all the time. I get up in the morning. I have a praying chair that I sit in. Sometimes I pray all day long because, you know, fear is still one of those things that sends shivers up my spine. And I have conversations with God like, are you sure you wanted this to happen? Because I don't know how to handle this right now. And I need help now. And remember who asked you for help. And that's the way it goes. And it is, I don't know, I feel like I do have a communication. I have a good friend who is a very, very spiritual person. And one day I was talking to her about something I was deathly afraid of. And she said, just because you're scared doesn't mean that you don't have a spiritual connection or that it isn't working. And so on days that I can't stop the world and make it go my way, and I'm afraid, I remember her words. And what I would say to a sponsee if they told me that they stopped and prayed in the middle of something, I would say, that is what you call your regulation spiritual experience, which they describe in the big book. Isn't it wonderful that we have a textbook where we can go and see that a spiritual experience is just doing it different than you did before? Just holding back that comment that you think might be constructive when I want to tell my husband how he should drive the car. Maybe I'll just reserve that comment for today. When my kids were small, I would, and they would be like on my last nerve, I'd say out loud, God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change and help me to remember that this is a child that I love very much. And they would stop what they were doing and they'd laugh. And previous to that, I would think, I just want to pull her hair. And I didn't. And so, you know, no kid of mine, well, I can't say that I never swatted them, but it's a very different life they had than the one that would have happened if I didn't have this. I had to learn how to surrender. And it's an ongoing lesson. I have to surrender to the fact that I'm a compulsive eater, surrender to the fact I need a food plan, surrender to the fact I need a sponsor, surrender the job situation, surrender growing older. When I can surrender, the masks melt, and I'm in a place I couldn't have gotten to if I hadn't done this work. Sometimes I'm not ready to surrender until I have the second punch. Because that's what helps me give up the death grip on whatever I'm trying to hold on to. And at that point in time, surrender happens not because I wished it, but because I finally could. And sometimes it just takes what it takes. Just takes the time. I try different things these days, or I continually try different things. Right now I'm using a meditation on the phrase, be still and know that I'm God. I heard about that on some other MP3 and started to use it that morning because I had a lot of turmoil in my head. So it goes, be still and know that I'm God. Be still and know that I am. Be still and know that I. Be still and know that. Be still and be still. Be. And I recite that over and over until I get calm. The other thing I do is I write an inventory. You get a handout. You get a prize for coming tonight. It's called an AEIOU inventory. A is for what is my abstinence. B is what E is what exercise did I do today. I is what did I do to take care of myself. O is how did I react with others. U is uncovering my feelings. That's been the most interesting thing to me since I started this. And then the person that mentioned this writes down three gratitudes in a Yahoo. Sometimes the gratitudes are hard too, which I find surprising because, you know, I've been here 27 years. Sometimes that's a little arrogance, you know, on my part. Let's see. Oh, yeah, I had a quote here from Emmett Fox. I sometimes read his things. And it said, if you have no time for prayer and meditation, you'll have plenty of time for sickness and trouble. Something I've kept in mind from time to time. Also, self-knowledge for the compulsive eater is no help at all, because once I start the abnormal reaction to whatever it is, then that phenomenon of craving starts. It has a description of the phenomenon of craving in the first, I think it's page XXIII, before the forwards in the book. And I don't think I read it for a few years, and the sponsor that made me that helped me with the first or fourth step asked me to read that, And I ask all the people that I sponsor to read that, because it just describes how the body responds to that stimulus, and how once the train starts going, it really is a very hard thing to stop. One of the other things I wanted to talk about was restored relationships. Like one of the commercials says, that's one of the byproducts of the program, and it's priceless. As a result of all the things I started to do, my relationships began to be healed, not always in a noticeable way for me. One of the first things that I started to do was to stop responding to the bait that sometimes would come out in family interactions. And like many women, I try to remember this with my daughters. You know, like many women, your mother's voice is like the voice of authority, you know? And when my kids were small, she would come down to my house and make it maybe 2 days, maybe three, or sometimes she'd call me up on the phone and there'd be this whine in the voice. And one day I thought to myself, I'm not going to yell at her. So I went away and sat down and opened my big book. And as I did that, after I was sitting there for a couple of minutes, I realized I was reacting to her like I reacted when I was 16. And so I decided that day, many, many years ago, that I was not going to have a relationship like that with anybody in my family. You know? And sometimes it means if the people are troubled, you just have to stop taking the bait and cut it off. Forgive me if you've heard this story. I tell it a lot. She used to write me letters with her unhappiness in it, and she'd put a check in it. And every time I would get one of these letters, I'd go berserk, because it felt like, you know, it felt like an accusation or something very negative towards me. And I decided to stop opening the letters. So she sends me this letter, and she calls me up on the phone. And she says, I sent you a letter. Did you get it? And I said, I got the letter, but I can't open it today, Mom, because every time I open those letters, I get mad at you. She says, there's a check in the letter. I said, that's fine, but I'm not opening the letter today. So the next day, she calls me up, and she says, did you open my letter? There's a check in it. I said, I can't open that letter today. Because every time I open those letters, I get mad at you. And I don't want to be mad at you today. So I hope you have a really nice day. And I got off the phone. She calls me back the third day. And she says, did you open the letter? I put a check in it. I said, I can't open that letter. Because I know that I'm going to get angry. And I don't want to be angry at you. And so she said, well, I guess I won't send you any more letters. And I said, that's the point. And I don't know that she ever sent me any more letters with checks in it after that. But I know that that day something really shifted for me. And I took ownership for myself how I was going to be in a relationship with somebody. A couple years later, my brother gets married. And she calls me up, and I hear the whine in her voice. And I learned to listen over these times. You know, after listening to people you talk to on the phone, you begin to listen to the feelings. And there is whatever the tone. And I said, what's the matter, sweetheart? Isn't anybody paying attention to you today? And she says to me, I just want to hear somebody say they love me. And you could have knocked me down with a feather, because that's not the relationship that we had before. That's not something you say to somebody you don't trust. And I had kind of developed an understanding of what her background was before that. And once I did that, I didn't need to forgive her anymore because I knew she was troubled. But, you know, up until the day that I had that realization, there was, like, this feeling of why doesn't my mother love me, you know? And after I figured it out, it was almost like I knew she had done more harm to herself than she ever did to me. And I didn't need to forgive anymore. It's really interesting. I speak kindly to myself. I didn't come in here with a lot of self-confidence. I have developed very good ways of living. And over these 27 years, I have a history I can look back on and say, you know, you showed up, you did the right thing, you lived well, you chose the higher ground. But I still get nervous. So sometimes I have to say, it's okay, sweetie. You know, God knew about this situation too. And if it's coming to pass, he's not going to drop you. I heard somebody say recently that if you have a step 3 problem, you really have a step 2 problem. So I back it up. Back it up. Okay. When the people that I sponsor call and say, bop, 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 this problem is going on, I'm not a relationship expert. I'm a person that's worked the 12 steps. But I can say to them, maybe we could say a prayer about that, you know? And sometimes we pray out loud, God, would you please send whoever it is an answer? And can you send a confirmation so we know that's what you wanted us to do? And, you know, sometimes it's just that important. Just that important. I had... When my mother was dying, she was in a nursing home for 5 years, and, you know, things had been reconciled before all that terrible stuff happened. She died of congestive heart failure, and the last couple of weeks were really horrendous. And I had, over the years, in our town we have a poetry club gone, so at this point in time I was endeavoring to write poetry. And I don't even know if this is a poem. It might be free verse. It might be nothing, just my rambling. But this is what I wrote. And I didn't have a title on it. And last night I typed it up so I could read the handwriting. And I called it, Who Could Have Predicted This? How many heartbeats do we have left? How many respirations to the last? I look at your sweet old face and am amazed that you're still here. So many times I think the time is very soon. How differently I feel about you today. We used to be such adversaries, fighting like vinegar on an open wound. There has been a lot of healing. Perhaps it takes such extreme circumstances to let go of all the unimportant things and choose what I would hold close. An unexpected gift in this life school lesson is that I choose to care for you now, to make our minutes pleasant. That it happened this way, my heart smiles at the peace between us. Who could have predicted this? When I came in here, I thought I was coming for a diet. I didn't think I was going to heal my heart or make things nice for my children. My kids never saw their mom at 215 pounds. They never... You know, they know me as a good person. I learned how to be fair with people. It says in one of the pieces of literature, you don't have to like everyone. You just have to treat them with justice and courtesy. So when somebody that I don't respect is giving me the business, I do my best not to do something I have to make amends for. And that thought, you just have to treat them with justice and courtesy, has saved me a lot of apologies that I probably would have had to make. Emmett Fox wrote in one of his books something about dying each day to wake up a better person tomorrow. And that's what I believe about the steps. There's a give up here. And as we give up the old behaviors, we create a space to make something new. I have a praying chair that I sit in every day. I write, I pray, I listen to sponsees, I call my sponsor from that chair, and I believe that that has a good energy for me. And I had to create a place like that for myself and my heart, in my house. I was doing a writing. Somebody I met via one of the phone meetings recently had been sponsored through this new system. And she said, and I've offered it to people, and nobody's taken me up on it yet. And I thought to myself, gee, I would like to know how that works. So I called her up the next day, and I said, you know, do you think you could take me through whatever your process was? And so we have begun to work together on those steps. And one of the things I wrote this week, you can't write a check for peace of mind, comes from living in my own rhythm. And I don't find that until I've practiced step 11. Says in step 1, the admission of our powerlessness over food opened the door to an amazing newfound power. I have a college degree today that I didn't have when I came into the rooms. I decided in 1990 to go back to school. My sponsor at that time encouraged me to go back to school. I thought I was stupid. I thought I couldn't learn. I recorded all the lectures from the professor on a tape recorder. And when I was walking around town, I was listening to what they were said. I was an A student and graduated summa cum laude. And I used to get nervous in the beginning and say, I don't know if I'm going to pass. And she'd say, you just do it one assignment at a time. You just do it one class at a time. And I finished in 2 years, the degree I started 20 years before. That's a gift to my program. And that was the key to the job description I have today. I wouldn't be able to make the living I make today if it weren't for the fact that I didn't finish my education. And the last thing I think I would like to say is if you're having any apprehension about beginning, just begin where you can and pray. Because as you open that willingness, you know, those gates will swing wider. I had a sponsor early on who said to me, God honors the fact that you're trying. And I don't remember much else we said to each other, but I remember the fact that she said that, and I believe that. I believe God honors my best efforts. So you start where you are. And we do the steps progressively. Step 4 comes after 1, 2, and 3. Step 8 and 9 comes after 6 and 7, after I've prayed and asked God to remove those defects that might have contributed to those situations. And I am continually trying to work on myself and trying to have a better attitude towards people. See, and if you, when you go through the book, patience and persistence are words that they keep using. Persistence is the glue that makes it all work. And so I think that's about all I had to say. I really appreciate you coming and listening. Thank you for your attention.
And now we open it up to, if does anybody have any questions for Christina?
Yes, ma'am.
How long have you been in OA? You came in, I don't know if you said
1981, it. 27 years. Been sponsored by a lot of good women.
And abstinent from the start?
No. No, I have a year. Anybody else? Yes.
You said you have a year. What do you do whenever you find that things are slipping or when they've, when you found yourself in relapse? What was the thing that made a difference to come back?
The last time, I knew that I wasn't working it the way I wanted to, and I wasn't working with the sponsor. So I bullied somebody into being my sponsor and did it the way the program was suggested. And so I recount it from that time because that's what I would ask. You know, that's the way I learned it. There have been times I thought, you know, I'm spiritual now. I don't need this anymore. And, you know, if you stop going to meetings, or my experience is if I stop going to meetings, if I stop plugging into a spiritual path, I get fluffy. And I don't know of any other way for me to be able to live an abstinent, good life. And I'm sure there are. I'm sure there are many paths to God, but this is the one that resonates with me. Anybody else? I guess we've said it all.
Thank you so much for coming and being a part of this meeting.